everyone, welcome to Adoption Adventures. Thank you as always for listening. It's wonderful to have you. I feel like today's episode, following on from last week's one, it's got some big old shoes to fill, but we did have a lot of fun doing our live episode. Those of you that joined us, thank you very much. Those of you that have caught up, hope you liked it. The feedback is that people enjoyed it, so we will do another one in the future. We will do more. It was really, really good. It was really good fun to sort of meet and greet some listeners and have a good chat with them as well. So thank you everyone that could make it. Sorry if you couldn't, but you'll hopefully be able to join the next one. So today's episode, I've had a listener get in touch and talk about a topic that we've started on. So they're talking about introductions. Now, we've talked about introductions, and I talked about how those introductions went for us and that experience. But this particular listener, they had the question about sort of your friends and family and how active they can be during or post-placement, basically. And I thought that was a really, really... it's a big topic, and it's something really important, actually, and it's something that I think I'm trying to remember if we touched on it when we did the episode of Nana, and how sort of how much we've gone into in the past. Now, this is always a tricky one, because when you're doing your introductions and you're talking with your social workers, undoubtedly, they're going to let you know that the recommendation is that extended family will not be able to interact or come and visit this child for a set amount of time. The struggle there is the set amount of time is very rarely given. It's very rare that they're able to be specific and say, we need you to wait 17 days, 6 hours and 22 minutes, and then it's okay for other people to start interacting with this child. The trouble is, as always, it's up for interpretation, and it's very child or children specific. So what could be right for one child might be absolutely horrific for another. So it's really, really difficult to define a suitable amount of time to sort of get things moving. I think in order to first truly understand why, or sort of understand the length of time, I think you have to delve into the why. Why do we have to leave it? I think if we can understand why we leave it, we can then start to work backwards on how long we should leave it. So the idea is that when this child or children moves in with their new family, they have to start forming an attachment to their new family. Now, we covered attachment in an episode, and we talked about sort of the timescales it takes, and every single child, when they move in, their attachment cycle goes back to zero, and they are back to being a newborn baby with their attachment. And those first few months are critical to a newborn and to newly adopted. Those moments are absolutely crucial to get right, because what we're doing in that time is we are teaching our children that they are safe and that they will be loved, cherished and cared for, and they're safe. And they're also going to have all of their needs met. Now, that's a big, big, big ask for parents and for children alike. So the more time that we can give that, the better. And what we need to do, the way that we do that is, again, we've gone into detail with the attachment episode, but just as a sort of a refresher, it's about the attachment cycle. It's about looking at when a child has a need, the parent or carer being able to offer that a solution to that need as and when it is needed. And the more times that you do that, the more times that you show that you are both physically and emotionally available for a child, the stronger that attachment will be. Now, to ensure that we don't blur the lines, it's much easier for these children if they can pick out a primary and sometimes secondary carer to turn to. So, like a newborn baby who is with a nursing mother, each time that that baby is hungry, the mother is there to feed. And that is having a need, a primary instinct. I need food. I'm going to make noise. I'm going to let you know that I need food. You need to provide it. And every single time that that noise is made, and every single time then that that need is met, it reassures that newborn baby that they are safe, loved, and they are going to have their needs met, which means that they can start to trust. The same is said for our children. It just so happens that some of them are a little bit older, and some of them are able to actually tell you what they want. Some still struggle to let you know what it is that they want, but they know that they need it. So it's about making sure that we are emotionally and physically available for our children and able to meet their needs and talk to them about what those needs are. And a good example is if you're out and you're playing and the child falls over and hurts themselves. They have a need for nurture at that moment. And what we have to do is offer that nurture. Straightforward, nice and easy. But every time that we are able to offer that nurture, we are reconfirming, you're safe. And I will look after you. I will care for you. And it's reaffirming that message to our children that we can be trusted and we're trusted adults. So they start to grow that relationship with us. Now, let's just say you're 1 week into the placement and you're out at the park and your mum or mother-in-law, it's usually the nans, decides that they're going to rock on up because they've waited far too long to meet their new grandchild and it's about time that they got to meet them. So they rock on up and they come along to the park. Now, bear in mind, they're experienced parents as well. That's another factor that we're going to come back to. But they rock on up to this park and they're sitting with you, talking, saying, doting after the little ones, saying how beautiful and wonderful they are and how lovely it is. And they get really excited, and then all of a sudden, the child falls over and hurts themselves. Now, what is the maternal instinct? It's to help and heal and make sure that you're okay. What if the nan, or the granddad, or the friend, responds first? What if they respond to the child before you do? And what if they meet the needs of that child first? Now, if we look at this from a logical perspective, I don't think that we're sitting here and saying, oh my goodness, Nana met little dude's needs a couple of times early on. That's it. It's impossible for him to form an attachment to anyone else. It's just not going to work. That's not what we're saying at all. But what we are saying is, if Nana was there in the early days, every single week, she was there, she was helping out, she was getting involved, she was really trying to do her bit, all that would happen is she would delay the attachment that little dude was able to make to me, the primary carer, or to Dad, the secondary carer. Would she somehow step in and become secondary carer, in a way pushing Dad out? Now, truth be told,
I think that that did happen in our world. I think that in the early days, Nana was available more because we had the summer holidays, so we were able to meet and spend a lot of time. So Nana was available more for little dude than Dad was observed to be. So she actually stepped into the role of secondary carer completely unaware that she'd done it, and 100% no malice or negative intent, and it didn't have a negative connotation for me or for little dude. But for Dad, there was a struggle, because he wasn't fighting just for top spot, he wasn't even able to fight for the second spot. So for him, emotionally, he was being pushed out and pushed back. Quite a challenge, quite difficult. So the whole idea of just asking our extended network to just pull back a little bit, just step back a little bit, is really crucial. Having lived the experience that I've lived, I was so pleased that I had Nana available, and she helped our journey. And even though it made Dad's journey a little bit harder, I wouldn't actually change it, because I think it was what I needed to recharge my batteries and be able to offer little dude the best that I had. So I had to, I didn't have to make a sacrifice, but Dad did. Dad had to get a lesser experience in the early days for my benefit. And I appreciate that that must have been really, really challenging for him. Now, we've talked about this and we have addressed it, and we understand that we did what we had to do at the time to make things work. And it did work, and it worked out, and now everyone, it fits great, so it's fine. But it's about understanding that in those early days, that was a struggle. So I guess we try to promote the idea that the extended family or the extended network try to create a little bit of distance, because that really, really helps everyone to be able to fit into place, form their attachments, form their bonds, find their feet as well, find their role, find out who they are as a parent. But it does add that challenge of when is right and when is not. I think that, like I say, for us, it was a situation of I needed it. I think in total I had something like between 12 and 14 weeks off of work, no school, no anything for little dude, and that was just 14 weeks for he and I. Now, that was both a blessing and a curse. It was a blessing because it gave us so much time to get to know one another, but it was a curse because it gave us so much time of just us and not much time to sort of fill that void and fill that time. And I'd gone from having no children to all of a sudden I've got a 7-year-old 24 hours a day, and it's my job to entertain them. And actually, that's quite a challenge. That's quite a difficult one. So it was really quite a scary experience, and it was scary to try and think, right, well, how do I do this? What am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to fill my days? And what type of parent do I want to be? What works here? What is good? And it can feel really isolated. It can feel really scary. And it can make you feel super alone. And it can also make you feel like you are falling short. And you are failing. If you have just got you and your thoughts during these tough times, you're going to assume that you're doing it wrong. So having Nana around to help me and support me and guide me and sort of talk to me about different parenting styles and things like that was really, really important. She also cut up the days and helped me with that. I keep referring back to Nana. It was not just Nana. We had so many other people in the network that were helping as well. But Nana was the one that was sort of a standing out from the crowd to make a big difference, you know? So that for me was something really, really crucial. What I've heard a lot of as well is the difficulty in that time of working out when you're allowed to be involved and when you're not. So the extended family trying to establish when are they allowed to get involved in the entire thing, and they're sort of advised stay away, stay away, stay away, and we're telling them you need to leave us alone, you need to leave us alone. And then you get into it, and then as a doctor's just sitting there thinking, I could really use some help right now, I could really use some support. Why is no one phoning me? Why is no one checking in on me? And then the extended support are sitting there going, well, I've been told to stay away until they're ready. I haven't heard from them, so I assume everything's fine. I'll wait for them to call me. And then this huge void grows between you. So I think it's establishing ground rules, it's establishing how what support you need, how you need that support, and how you need people to ask you if you're okay and to check in with you and make sure that you're okay. That's really, really important. So it is a real tough one. It is a tough one to work out what is the perfect time to leave it, and once you start it, how do you start it? And what's the frequency? What's the intensity of that relationship? Again, you've got to do what's right for you, and you've got to do what's right for the child. The thing I would say at this point, which I don't necessarily think that I'll say these words loads and loads, at that point, I think actually the child's needs come secondary. The reason I'm saying that, before you all gasp and shock, you need to check in on yourself. You need to make sure you're okay. A thing that I constantly promote to my adopters is if you are running on empty, there is no way you're going to be a good parent. So in those early days, you're going to be running on empty very quickly because you're so switched on, you're so focused, your brain is in overdrive trying to get this right. So you're going to be overstressing, overthinking, and over worrying. As a result, you're going to be exhausted, you're going to be sleep deprived, you're going to be losing your own identity. And then somebody's saying, right now, be a good parent. What does a good parent look like? Yeah, it's so much to ask for. So in those early days, make room for you. Find time for you. And if that does mean that you need a nana or a neighbour or a friend to just have 10, 15, 20 minutes with your child to give you a chance to have a cup of tea that's still hot, then do that, because that's what you need. You need that time to make sure that you are taking care of yourself so as you can then take care of them. Now, like I say, my priority has always and will always be the children in the situation. But in order to offer the love, care, support for these children, you need to make sure you're offering it to yourself first. Look out for you so as you can look out for them. And in looking out for you, it might be that you need to have a cup of tea with an adult and have an adult conversation about adult things. Undoubtedly, it will turn out that you end up talking about the child non-stop, but have that time. Think back to things that you would have done pre-placement and think, okay, I would still like to be able to put that into my world. So if you like going for a run, make sure you're still making time for that. If you found that you had other hobbies and you've had to put them on hold, that's understandable too, because new parents often put their hobbies and put their own interests on hold for a little bit. But make a plan to go back to it, and make a plan to drop in. Much like sort of during maternity leave or paternity leave, a parent will often take their newborn baby into their place of work for just a drop-in session and a hello. They do that to sort of maintain some sort of sanity, but also to reach out and speak to people that they were talking to that they haven't necessarily spoken to. To reach out to them, spend time with them, because you need to let people know that you've not gone. So I know that I've gone kind of off on a little bit of a tangent there, but it all comes back to the same thing. When we're looking at those early days introductions and we're looking at when we can start introducing the wider family, we need to make sure that it's the appropriate amount of time for your circumstances. The other factor here is that you want to be excited and you want your family and friends to be excited. They're never going to be excited if they never get to meet the child. So give them an opportunity to start engaging with that. We had a massive, massive anxiety that that little dude, his behaviour would be struggling, and then would our friends and family assume that it's because we're doing a bad job of parenting? Now looking back, of course that's a ridiculous thing to think, but at the time that was a really huge, huge worry and concern for me. Would my parents assume that I was a bad parent if little dude was misbehaving? Now, 8 times out of 10, when he was around there, he was not misbehaving, because our kids often perform. And, you know, they do really, really well when they're not just with you. But even when he wasn't in a great place, my parents didn't judge me. They helped me. We had friends that were there to support us. So give your network the credit that they deserve and the time they deserve. But be honest with them beforehand. Talk to them. Talk about what it is that you need and why you have these concerns and what you need from them. I think most people are really accommodating. Hopefully that's helped. Hopefully that's sort of given some ideas on how you can A, have those conversations, but B, how you can start thinking about what length of time would be right for you and yours. But it is a difficult one, and I think it doesn't matter how much you think about it. I don't know if there is an exact right answer, and I think only time tells you if it's working. But be observant, keep your eye out. If you're finding that relationships aren't sort of forming the way that you'd want them to with your immediate in the house family, have a look. Have you introduced too many people, and have you done it too big, too much, too soon? If so, just step it back a bit. Step it back and just care for your little family, and then let it grow. You know, it's gonna grow. They're going to get to meet all of these other people. Just give it time. That's it from me today. Hope you enjoyed that. As always, you can find us on our social media. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at adoption.adventures, or you can find us on Twitter at adoptionadvent1. Or drop us an email at adoptionadventures123@gmail.com. Love to hear your feedback, love to hear your comments. Speak soon. Bye.